Coming up on KUCB News, what's the next step for Surimi, and how does Alaska rank as a hub for air cargo? Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Monday, April 23rd, 2018. Dutch Harbor fishermen won't harvest herring until the summer, but early yesterday morning, the togiak season did get underway. As KDLG's Avery Lill reports, it was a windy start for the state's largest sacro herring fishery.
A gale warning from NOAA was in effect Sunday as togiak herring fishing got underway. The fleet faced winds over 30 miles per hour, and that posed a challenge for fishermen, said area management biologist Tim Sands.
The same fleet is over there, and it's pretty tough conditions because of weather. I know some fish is being taken, but I don't think a lot.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game surveyed the district Saturday and concluded that enough herring had arrived to meet the threshold for opening the fishery. 35,000 tons. The combined purseine and gillnet quota for the Togiak District sacro fishery is about 24,000 tons, slightly larger than last year's quota. It's mostly seiners participating. ADF&G only expects one gillnet boat to be a part of the fishery this year. As for quality, when herring swim into the waters near Togiak, it can take some time for them to mature enough for their spawn to be marketable.
I've heard reports that it's mixed at this point. Some are mature, but not all of them, and that's typically what we see the first couple days of the fishery. There's not a whole lot of mature fish around. It just takes them a couple days to ripen up once they come into the shallow water.
Herring fishing in Togiak is open until further notice, and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game will close fishing when the fleet takes close to the quota. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Locally, ADF&G has allocated 1,800 tons of herring for the Dutch Harbor food and bait fishery, scheduled to open in mid-July. That quota is on par with last year's solid harvest, following a bust of a season in 2016. Seiners caught just 200 tons that summer. When people think of Alaska seafood, salmon and halibut come to mind. But the state also produces a lesser-known fish product sought after all around the world. It's surimi, the base for imitation crab. And now the man who helped to establish surimi in America is on a mission to improve how it's made. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
Tyree Lanier is a food scientist at North Carolina State University, where he's been since the 1970s. He has a background in the science of hot dogs, so working on seafood initially was a bit of a stretch for him.
I started off trying to make hot dogs out of fish, believe it or not, and then I heard about this product called surimi.
Or, as Lanier refers to it, the hot dog of the sea. For thousands of years, surimi seafood has been part of the Japanese cuisine. It comes in a variety of flavors and shapes.
There are forms that look like marshmallows. There are forms that look like noodles.
You probably know it as the fake crab meat in most California rolls. But until just a few decades ago, you could scarcely find surimi seafood in the United States. Lanier says there were a few reasons why early 80s America seemed ready to adopt a version of the food. One of them was the king crab fishery in Kodiak was on the verge of collapse, and the food industry was in a race to supply an alternative.
And so they said, okay, here's this imitation that looks very much and tastes very much like king crab. We can't get king crab. Let's bring this stuff from Japan and flood it into that market.
But there was also huge potential to produce surimi domestically from pollock in the Bering Sea. First, the state's fisheries would have to come on board. Lanier went to Alaska to talk about that possibility. Hot dog of the sea or not, surimi didn't get a warm reception.
It was basically like, what is that stuff? And we will never do that in the United States. And I knew that it was going to be done here because we were buying all this imitation crab and it was just taking off like a rocket.
Eventually, though, companies came around to Lanier's way of thinking and the first 3ME processor opened in Kodiak in 1985. And now, decades later, Lanier has another big idea for Alaska. He says 3ME plants are losing profits down the drain, literally. Around 40% of the soluble protein from the 3ME-making process winds up in the water.
Whether it's good or bad for the environment, I'm not qualified to say. But whether it's good or bad for food waste, it's terrible.
He says that wasted product could account for upwards of $60 million of savings each year. Then there's the impact on the ocean. According to Alaska Sea Grant, the 3ME wash water can form an oxygen-depleted goo and smother marine life.
You can look at Google Earth and look down on the vicinity of any 3ME plant, and some of these are quite large. And on a given day, if they've taken the picture right, you'll see a big white cloud in the water.
So to reduce waste, Lanier helped develop a technology to recapture the solids.
Well, imagine making cheese. Okay, you make cheese and you get curds and whey, like Little Miss Muffet. Well, we're doing exactly the same thing. We have basically 3ME whey.
And that 3ME whey can be turned into a lower-grade 3ME product. He says the water that filters into the ocean would run crystal clear. Trident Seafoods has already shown interest. And Lanier thinks for 3ME producers, this technology is a win-win.
It solves many problems and it creates much more product for them. So now, from the same amount of fish, the same amount of money they've spent catching those fish, and they have a quota, so they can only catch so many fish, they can now make more product.
Lanier doesn't think that America's love affair with imitation crab will disappear anytime soon. And now there's a more efficient way of getting it to market. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The Ted Stevens International Airport in Anchorage is the fifth busiest hub for air cargo in the world, according to a release from the State Department of Transportation. That's up one spot from 2016, although down from a high of third place in recent years. In 2017, the amount of cargo moving through the airport increased by 7%. In total, about 3 million tons of freight landed at Ted Stevens last year. Alaska's largest airport is a strategic stopping point for cargo transiting between North America, Asia, and Europe. According to the DOT, each day around 75 large cargo jets land, many for refueling and freight transfer. Still, the world's number one airport for cargo is in Hong Kong, followed by Memphis, Tennessee, Shanghai, China, and Incheon, Korea. A news reporter born and raised in Alaska took home one of journalism's top honors last week. Claire Baldwin and two of her colleagues with Reuters News Agency won the Pulitzer Prize for International Reporting for their series on the ongoing drug war in the Philippines. As APRN's Casey Grove reports, Baldwin's work has taken her from the Matsu Valley to the streets of Manila.
Before spending a year and a half reporting on death squads, Claire Baldwin says she had seen maybe one dead body. And that was in a casket at a funeral. But a big part of Baldwin's mission was to show the pattern behind why more and more Filipinos were showing up dead on city streets. Baldwin, 34 and a graduate of Colony High School in Palmer, says it was difficult but important.
Yeah, there's a lot of death and blood and guts, and you have to kind of keep in mind why you're there. And you're there to tell a story about what's happening.
What was happening, and what Baldwin says is still happening, is a drug war under Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte that has been marked by thousands of extrajudicial killings. Duterte says the killings by his government's anti-drug squads are justified, but they have been condemned by international human rights groups. The hard-nosed reporting by Baldwin, her colleagues, and others added a greater depth to news of the ongoing violence. It has also given their international audience a better sense of the actual numbers of deaths and the impacts to the families left behind.
And I also hope, you know, this brings a lot more attention back to the Philippines because the drug war is still happening. People are still being killed. These families are still asking for justice. And there are a lot of really wonderful local reporters that are still covering this.
Baldwin was once a local reporter, too. That was before college at Stanford, before she became a special correspondent in Southeast Asia for Reuters, and before moving to Hong Kong, where she lives on a boat. She was still in high school when she reported for the Matsu Valley Frontiersman. She also worked for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner and the Peninsula Clarion. And among other outdoor activities, Baldwin did some mountaineering with her dad. She says growing up in Alaska shaped her as a person and helped her in many ways.
The ability to improvise, or the desire to improvise, being comfortable in kind of uncomfortable places, you know, because the more you can just sort of deal with yourself and be comfortable for long periods of time in rough conditions, the better. Like, you'll do a better job.
Baldwin's parents, Ralph Baldwin and Susan Gunther, still live in Wasilla. They say they were proud and pleasantly surprised to get what they described as a typically understated announcement from their daughter about the Pulitzer.
Sometimes when you raise your kids to be independent, the downfall is that they do take off and they end up in different parts of the world. But, you know, we're really proud of them. And when we can see them, we're thrilled.
Baldwin does make it back to Alaska to visit from time to time, but she is currently working on another reporting project, this time in Bangladesh, telling the stories of hundreds of thousands of refugees fleeing persecution and, again, reports of government-sanctioned killing. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.